Hi, this is Kenneth Nguyen. A few years ago, before I launched the Vietnamese podcast, my father and all of his siblings passed away. Their passing marked the loss of their stories and the connection to my grandparents and great-grandparents. This is partly what inspired me to start the work of the podcast. Many of you still have the opportunity to record and preserve the legacies of your own families. I've just begun to sit with a few families now for interview sessions to record the rich histories of their parents and the lives of the generations that preceded them. Don't let your family's stories go untold. Take a moment to reach out to me, and together we will bring out your family's story on a recorded journey. I've included the link in the episode description. Visit VietnamStoryBank.com today for more information. I have Eric Nong, the artistic director of the Viet Film Festival, joining me today. Welcome to the podcast, Eric.
Thanks, Kenneth. I'm happy to be here.
I got to see you last Sunday on stage talking about the launch of the Viet Film Festival. And there's so much information that you store in your mind. And I'm like, and here we are. And I'd love to hear a little background about, you know, how you came to be the artistic director of this amazing film festival.
Yeah, that's a bit of a long road. I didn't hear about Viet Film Fest until I was an undergrad. I was in my final quarter of undergrad at UC Irvine in the spring of 2015, and I was taking Cham Le's Vietnamese American Experiences course. One of the extra credit things was that you should go attend Viet Film Fest. And being a film buff, longtime film buff, I was like, never heard this before. Might as well give this a shot, see what it's like. So I was at VIFF 2015 as an attendee. I didn't quite get involved with the festival again until 2018 because I was just too busy with grad school stuff at the time. But finally free of grad school, hey, I have time now in the fall. And I volunteered for the first time in 2018. Technically, it wasn't exactly of my own making. Cham gave my Tumblr blog, if you can believe this, it's a classic film blog, by the way, to Yvonne Tran, who was with Walla at the time. And Yvonne contacted me over a private ask function on Tumblr and said, "Hello, Eric. I really enjoy your writing on films. Would you like to help us in Viet Film Fest in some capacity?" So that has to be one of the stranger stories, I think, when it comes to a VIFF volunteer. But that's how I ended up here. I wrote a few synopses in 2018, and boom, I was a curatorial committee member in 2019. I was informed that there was an artistic director position they were creating for what would have been the Viet Film Fest 2020, but I think we know what happened. Of that position while the NBA shut down. I clearly remember that night. I was ready to watch the Utah Jazz play, and Rudy Gobert just had to wipe his fingers all over the mics. And we all know what happened next with the pandemic. And then I became artistic director in 2021, and this is my fourth go as artistic director.
What does an artistic director do for a film festival?
Yeah, so essentially it's to... Curate to me is a bit of a dead word, but it's the word I'm going to go with here. Basically, curate the program and schedule of this festival. I don't do this alone. So I'd need to start from, I think, how the process of the film festival first. Our submission window at this time opens up sometime in January. It runs through mid, late April. And in that time, while we're accepting things, I'm actually not watching the films until much later into that process. We invite at the very beginning three people outside of the Vietnamese American Arts and Letters Association be part of the curatorial committee. And they, along with myself and Bala's executive director, Issa, watch every single bit that gets submitted to us. Yes, that is true. Every single movie. And this year there was 104 of them. A lot of watching. And
is that the record of submissions we've ever had, or is that sort of like
you know, par for the course.
This is, no, it is definitely not par for the course. It, that was a record for an annual edition of Viet Film Fest. VIF was biannual from 2003 to 2013. You'd have to ask Issa about the exact record, but this topped every single annual edition of Viet Film Fest. So,
but that's a good number then. Yeah. That's a good sign.
Indeed it was. So the curatorial committee, again, along with myself and Issa, are the ones who watch the films. It's up to the curators to basically approve or decline the films. In the selection meeting, as I like to call it, I have a say as well when people are indecisive, when they have to recuse themselves due to a conflict of interest. Maybe they served as a producer or a consultant on one of the movies that got submitted or something along those lines. And I also am there to give context and guidance if folks ask for it. So I like to think I'm a sort of judge, but also a sort of tiebreaker as well. In the events.
Right.
So when that is done, I now have a programming team, and this has been built up over a few years now. I have a programming fellow from UC Irvine's School of Humanities, and a new addition this year is a programming intern. So previously, for last 3 years, it had been two people, just myself and the fellow. Now it's three people who sit back after the curatorial committee has made its selections, sit back and think. And this sounds easy, but it's really not. Think how these short films, and there are, this year there are 39 of them that got it. How can we combine these short films to make short film sets that are aesthetically or thematically cohesive? We don't throw short films into a blender and see what comes out randomly. I understand there are some film festivals that do that, that are bigger than Viet Film Fest and smaller than us who do that. I'm not sure why, but we make an attempt to find a through line, find a theme that connects all five or six of those short films, and short films which pair well with a certain feature as well. That's, to sit back and think about that takes
time. It's a Herculean task.
Yeah. So there are other things you have to be aware about as well. We kind of consider seven short films as too much for a set. It's too much stop and go, stop and go, stop and go for the audience. We also think that there's a sweet spot for a runtime. I don't think I can justify a short film set under 60 minutes. And I think going over 100, unless absolutely necessary, is a little bit over the top.
Okay, let me ask you this: where do you get those quantified sort of calculations on, you know, attention spans? And did you get it? Did you pick it up from? Is there another festival model? You know, do you all like sort of dig into other festivals and this is how they run it, or is this something that you've noticed? Because those are interesting metrics. I've never been to so many film festivals. I've never thought about, like, down to the detail of what you just mentioned. It's very interesting to me.
Yeah, it's a combination of both. I do study runtimes of other festivals, other similar festivals around here. What is now VC Film Festival in Los Angeles, San Diego Asian Film Festival, the like. So I look at those, look at how they program things and adapt. A little of my own personality is in there as well, I'd like to think. Another influence I have are every year there, it's not the Academy, but it's, I think, Shorts TV. They will do the three packages of the best animated, best documentary, and best live action short film nominees for the Oscars that year. And I've noticed that in animated, particularly, animated shorts tend to be shorter than the live action and the docs. Just for everybody's awareness, a short film, as defined by the Academy, is 40 minutes or less. A feature film is 41 minutes or more. We use the same definition. The animated shorts, again, tend to be shorter. And sometimes, if you take all five nominees together, the runtime ends up to be 40 or 50 minutes. And you really can't justify a ticket price, a full ticket price for a 40 or 50 minute program. So what Shorts TV will do is throw in some of the honorable mentions, the films that almost got nominated in there, just to bulk it up a little bit and get it past an hour.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
There's all these economic conditions that are behind the choices.
Yeah, and I think with Doc Shorts as well, for those who are in Orange County, if you know the Regency South Coast, just across the Nordstroms in Santa Ana and Costa Mesa, they also do the documentary shorts, and the documentary shorts tend to be the longest. The Doc Short directors tend to skirt with that 39-minute, 40-minute mark. And if you put all five films together, you can have a runtime of almost 3 hours. And what the Regency will do is chop it up. And I know this sounds crazy, but they'll sometimes do an A program and a B program, split it between a Saturday and a Sunday if it's too long. Because 3 hours is a lot to ask. I can sit through it, but I know a lot of folks can't.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to do it. There's no way. I have trouble sitting through an hour these days, let alone 2 hours. Yeah. What got you, what do you think inspired you to go so hard with film and watch, you know, I think how many films do you watch a year?
That varies. This year we're looking at a record low because I felt, because one thing, I had a vacation in May and I had to split my VIF viewing. So I had to go very hard after Memorial Day on the film viewing. So I felt a little burnt out by that. That usually doesn't happen, but it did this year. But at the moment, I'm still looking at more than 100 feature films by the end of this year. And that's supposed to be a record low. And mind you, I usually don't rewatch things. It's very rare I will rewatch something these days. It's usually because, oh, here's a classic movie that I want to bring a friend to, or something that I want to introduce my little sister to. As for why go so hard on it, it's just an art form that I fell in love with, not from a very young age, but something that I think started to really appeal to me in high school. And it was a matter of, there's got to be more films like this. There's got to be more films with this actor or this director somewhere out there, and I've got to go find it. But I think before I think, and this is something that appeals to Viet Film Desk as well, I think the most valuable thing that watching all of these movies can give you is a broader perspective, historically, culturally, sociologically, what have you.
You know, the Viet Film Festival has grown quite a bit in the last few years. And I think that there is a certain point where Vietnamese diaspora children, second generation, are looking for bits and pieces of their identity and trying to form it all. And I think the Viet Film Festival is a place where you can kind of come and see yourself, if you're a Vietnamese American, mm-hmm. you could see yourself on screen. And that means a lot, because it's not just these films from Vietnam, you know, that are coming that have Vietnamese people from the homeland. But there's Vietnamese people from France. There's Vietnamese people from the United States. Film people from all over the world, which makes it so special.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I have had friends in the past who have told me, you know, I don't relate to this film, or I don't relate to the characters in it, and I don't like it. But here's the thing: look at me. I'm Vietnamese American. I have rarely seen myself. I've never seen myself. I'll say that right now. In an American movie, and I've never seen, actually, full stop. I've never seen myself in a movie. Period. I'm not sure if I want to. I see elements. of myself. I see elements of people I know. And if people can relate to at even the smallest degree to a some sort of narrative film or documentary film we showed at Film Fest, that perhaps, you know, they've never seen the idea of, I don't know, of ancestor worship, or that very Vietnamese notion of we have to take care of their elders as we get older, or just other facets of Vietnamese culture. I think we are doing our job. I don't think that any one Film Fest can capture what it means to be Vietnamese in its entirety. That's just way too much to ask. And I'm not exactly sure that Viet Film Fest in as a whole has done that yet. But I'd like to think that we are moving in that direction, and that we at least provide a snapshot of where the community is at a given point in time. Now, I was 10 years old when Viet Film Fest began in 2003, and I obviously didn't know about it. I've heard stories about it. I've heard stories about the old days, but I wasn't there. I would like to think those early festivals were also equally snapshots of a community in a certain time and place. And I hope we, this year in 2024, the years I've been doing this and in the past and the future, continue to do that.
I believe that there is a theme for each year's film festival. Am I wrong?
Not necessarily as I've been here. That's very difficult to do a theme wide for a festival. That's that'd be very daunting. And I wouldn't want to corner films that aren't relating to that theme as outliers. I hesitate to do that. I think that's what the purpose of, again, the short film theming is at the end of the day.
So, yeah. What are the criteria that you have in place to pick films?
Well, I mean, obviously they have to be made by people of Vietnamese descent, or feature people of Vietnamese descent in there, or be relevant somehow to the Vietnamese community. That is the baseline. If you can't, if you can't meet any of those three, then it's not worth applying to our festival. And we've had plenty of those happen. It's just folks who think this is a general film festival. We are not a general film festival. This is not Sundance. This is not Newport Beach. This is not Cannes. This is a very specific set of criteria we've got, at least for you to apply to it. Now, after that, how do you get in? That is a mixture of many things. The thing is, our festivals. Yes, you were about to say something.
No. I'm curious to hear what comes
right. So it's a mixture of many things. This is a hybrid festival. We're both online and in person. So I don't like to think that we have a space issue. At the end of the day, it's some very strange combination of production values, acting, writing, how well you develop your narrative themes or your documentarian themes, how artistically interesting your film is, it's just some weird combination of all of that. And out of that, the curators will sit down, talk about it with myself and Issa, and try to form an agreement from there. Basically, we have we ask our curators to rate things from a 10-point scale, but we also give them a yay, nay, maybe. I basically say if it's a unanimous three yays, it's in. If it's a unanimous three nays, it's out. Everything in between is completely up for discussion. how does it fit into Viet Film Best? There are sometimes some films where we're not quite sure that go over very worn territory. We have a lot of familial conflict films. That's just always going to be a thing. I feel like we are seeing fewer refugee stories as time marches on, which is an interesting development. I think we are seeing also a proliferation of LGBTQ+ movies, but in another interesting development, fewer of those are coming out movies. So a lot of them are queer characters who are queer, and it's kind of incidental, and that's great.
These are
trend lines that I think you are seeing across film in general in the United States and beyond. And I think it's just the natural progression of time as well. But again, for some of these that have themes that are covered again and again and again, sometimes we do make comparisons. Like, you know, this film handled its familial conflict over a Thanksgiving dinner table better than that. And sometimes that doesn't play well for that latter movie.
How do you know if a movie is good?
It's really a gut feeling sometimes, right? But no, it's just so here's the thing: I'm not a filmmaker, and I'll admit that freely. But if it allows you to learn more about yourself, or others, or the characters and subjects contained within, and you are able to occupy their mindset, step inside their shoes for however long that film is, and it does so in an interesting and compelling way, then it's well worth it, and it should be in the festival. Of course, I didn't say anything in there about technical capabilities. If it's fuzzily shot and I can't see anything because it's crappily lit, then sorry, it's not going anywhere. I think things like editing, I honestly think that editing and your sound mix will destroy a movie faster than bad writing and bad acting, far faster. And it is very apparent when that is the case.
Those technical issues are paramount to somebody sitting in the audience just ingesting what's going on screen. You can't really think about any of the visuals or the audios when it's not there, or it's broken. You know, it's almost impossible to have a pleasant experience watching a film if your audio is broken or your lighting is not there. Yeah. So yeah, those are the things that that are like at the very minimum. But then we're looking at like, how do you know that your taste, and I'm not saying you, but somebody who's selecting the other three that are selecting the movies, that, you know, I always wonder when people come together to pick these sort of subjective pieces, how do you all get on the same page about quality, about feeling, about gut emotions?
I don't think I can police how a person reacts to a movie. I have no interest in doing that. I think it's always good to have, I said this the other day, you can't have one person do this alone because that's too much power for any one person. And that's only just one perspective as well. What we kind of like to do with the curatorial committee is also get a combination of at least one person be a filmmaker, at least one of them be an academic who knows the community well. And the third wild card is basically anybody we feel is qualified to be a part of the curatorial committee. And there's a lot of disagreement. There will always be a lot of disagreement. And it's a matter of, and in the times where we do vehemently disagree, sometimes it just comes down to majority rules at the end of the day. That's just how it is. I've had films where I vehemently disagreed with their placement at Film Fest Gideon. I didn't like it. And I maybe complained about it for a few seconds, but after that, I have to program it and have to program it respectfully. I bite my tongue doing so. I won't say anything about it publicly, but I will do it. So there's a give and take. There's a compromise there. Again, there's no point in policing people's reactions to a movie at all.
Now, when we are talking about reactions, we're talking about many different things. And one thing I do want to ask about is geography, where movies are coming from these days. A lot more movies are coming from Vietnam. And we understand that the political nature of our community and the homeland is very different. I don't think that the homeland really thinks about how we feel, but we feel how we feel about movies coming from the homeland. Can you tell me or answer, you know, I know it's a two-part question, where are movies coming from, you know, this year, and how do we deal with certain political issues that are in movies that are coming from our homeland?
Yeah, well, I don't think there were too many political movies, so to speak, that came out of Vietnam this year that were submitted to us. But I will give an example of a rejected movie from a year back. I won't say the title. I won't name any names. But it was a story about a Viet Cong war hero. And now I am not politically inclined to knee-jerk reject a North Vietnamese narrative to the Vietnam War. I know there are some in my family who would disagree with that vehemently. I know this. And I know there are many people in the community who would. But at the end of the day, I think its treatment of Arvin soldiers was just terrible, say the least. And it even got to the point where in the credits, they listed them as Puppet Soldier 1, Puppet Soldier 2, Puppet Soldier 3. And that's a big red flag. I think that is indicative of someone who has not been able to look past the propaganda of Vietnamese government and have not examined the impact of the war beyond the supposedly victorious side. I say supposedly because I think there were just losers in that war at the end of the day. So that's one example.
Yeah.
It's very rare, but it happens. I think there are still political elements to a lot of the films that we get in Viet Film Fest. This is the other part of that question now. But they tend to be very domestic politics these days. We have one of our films for Viet Film Fest 2024 is Taking Root, Southeast Asian Stories of Resettlement in Philadelphia. It's a documentary. Won Nhi Nguyen is the director, and it is completely on the story and the politics of how Southeast Asians, so just not Vietnamese, but Cambodian, Mao, Laotian folks settled in the Philadelphia area and the troubles and the successes they had in doing so, and the community they've created since then. And it is a illuminating work and a very hyper-local work that still invites the audience in to learn more about, again, that very hyper-local history, but it is also part of the Vietnamese-American fabric. So again, yeah, there are politics in films, in the films we get outside of Vietnam, but they tend to be a lot more domestic these days. There is another one from Germany as well, and it is it's beautifully done. If I could just, sorry, excuse me for a second. There are so many films to look at here. There's a film where we have a mother escaping from Czechoslovakia as it is about to fall, and she's trying to get into West Germany. And that is, again, a very political work in a sense, but once more, it's a very domestic look into things. It's by the way, the movie is called I Loved You First. Very, very specific with its politics.
And that's a feature film?
It's a short film.
Short film. Okay. And who are the people that come to the film festival? What's the demographics that we're talking here?
Well, a lot of them are some of the folks who have known the Vietnamese American Arts and Letters Association for a long time, who are just our loyal members. I know they're not getting any younger, but I always enjoy seeing them. And I enjoy having them around. I also like to think we are reaching out to more folks who are my age, us millennials, who are at a point in time where maybe we don't see our families as much anymore. Some of us, I know a lot of us are still living with our parents, but for those who are further flung, and maybe are not as connected to the community anymore, we miss a part of that. I have friends who are, no longer SoCal based, who, tried an attempt to watch Viet Film Fest virtually and try to reconnect. So I think there is an element there. And of course, our Orange County, our Southern California base as well. But I need to also mention that, again, we are a hybrid festival. This was a decision made back in 2021 because obviously COVID was still around and is something we have kept. And over the years, we have cultivated I'm not going to say insignificant, nor am I going to say a gigantic audience. It is a good handful of folks who are returning year after year from beyond Southern California to watch our films. I have a number of non-Vietnamese friends that I've made over my time at undergrad and grad school. And I was at UC Santa Cruz, by the way, from 2011 to 2013. So I have a bunch of Northern California friends who are not Vietnamese at all. And they have come to support the festival virtually because they just can't justify coming down to SoCal just for a weekend for the festival. I hope they are able to some year. But if they attend virtually, I'm okay with that.
Do you feel, as somebody who came up in Orange County around a lot of Vietnamese people, that the culture in Orange County, the Vietnamese American culture, is it sort of on an upswing, or is it, you know, on a downswing, and, you know, younger people are not really interested in learning about the music or the traditions, and they're just in it for, like, every year we just come home for Tet and be with our parents? What's the temperature and the pulse read for Vietnamese Americans in Orange County?
That's a fantastic question. I'm not sure if I'm the best person to answer this at all.
Just from your perspective, from one man's perspective.
I think the culture is changing, but in a way that, yes, a lot of the old traditions are going to go to the wayside. I think the Vietnamese American community eventually will look like something like the Irish Americans, the Italian Americans who have been here for more than a century will look like eventually. I think there will always be an element who uphold the traditions and the language. Full disclosure, I am not fluent in Vietnamese at all. My Vietnamese is terrible. And here I am still talking about this and in this position. I'm just curious. I think it was a matter of, if we're going to go back to my family past, my parents, I'm going to be very personal here. But my parents, I live in Irvine. I grew up in Irvine. Irvine is, it is very Asian these days, but when I grew up there in my kindergarten class, I mean, it was probably one of maybe three Asian kids in the whole kindergarten class. By the time I graduated high school, my high school class was plurality Asian. Irvine has changed a lot over that time. And I know it's not a Vietnamese dominant city, but it gets you thinking. My parents, when I was very young, I think there was an idea that they wanted me much more to assimilate than to necessarily adopt the Vietnamese culture. I know that's very different for some parents, but my parents were more on the assimilation side. And I say that in a neutral way. Not with any malice, not with any, oh, this was the way to go. I say it neutrally. And they were of the opinion if Eric or my middle name, Kwa, if Kwa was, as they always call me, if Kwa was to learn more about Vietnamese culture, he will do it himself. And I like to think that I'm not saying this is the end of the arc, but this arc is probably going to be with me till the rest of my life, and I don't know where it's going.
An arc
of learning more about
being
what it means to be Vietnamese, Vietnamese culture, yada yada yada.
Why do you think that you have this desire, this inspiration to carry on the arc till you die? I mean, it's not everywhere. No, it's not, because I have it too. You and I both have that. We share that deeply. And this is why we do the work that we do. Why do you have it?
It wasn't always that way, right? It wasn't there until maybe I would like to say, again, we're getting really personal here. My own wife had a stroke, and he eventually passed away about several years later. I'm sure he had a lot of stories with them. He was an Arvin photojournalist who dealt with the fact that he was put into a re-education camp along with his eldest living son. And he never really spoke about his experiences to his kids and the only person he really spoke about it to was to my grandmother, who is thankfully still around. So I never really got to hear those stories. My grandmother's still around, so I can't say it's gone with them, but they're inaccessible to me at this moment. In many ways, it is, in a sense, reviving my grandfather in a way, who I think he would tell you that me and my sister were her favorite grandkids. It is. It's a sense of, I don't want to say resurrecting the dead, that's wrong, but it is a sense of trying to honor,
keep his presence around still. Yeah,
exactly. That is an element to it. And also a lot of it is, I just randomly had the time to have a for fun class my last year of undergrad at UC Irvine. Why not the hell do it? And just kind of went from there.
You know, Eric, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I'm going to ask you a question about films. Yeah. I'm going to ask you a question about your favorite Vietnamese films. And I'm going to ask you a question about perhaps your three most favorite Vietnamese films that you've watched in your life. And I hate to put you on the spot and do this to people, but as somebody who has watched so many films in the Vietnamese space, I am really curious what you find. And let's not end it at three. If you have five that you can't place if you can't place the top three and you want to go to five, you know, I'd be more than happy to hear these titles that you have.
All right. Well, I'll give you three, because full disclosure, when I took this artistic director job, I took it knowing that I would have a lot of backlog to do, in the fact that there's a lot of movies I haven't seen in the old days. And over there on the other side of the room right now is a box of DVDs I have borrowed from Issa that I'm very slowly getting through. Very slowly. And she's like, there's no pressure, but I will get around to some of them. So there's a lot I haven't seen. So a lot of what I'm going to say is probably going to be very recent. So just so you know.
Yeah, I just want to hear it.
I think top of the list has to be Song Lai. That was
okay, great.
Gorgeous. Drop dead gorgeous movie.
Yeah, so Song Lai is a movie by Leon Le that was maybe 4 years ago, Was it pre-pandemic?
Yes, it was at Viet Pop Fest 2019. I think it probably appeared the year before.
Yeah, what a great film. That's definitely up there with me. I agree with that. That's a great taste there. So Lang's an amazing film.
Another one I would like to point out, I think it appealed to me because for those who don't know, Nung, as would be the more proper pronunciation. I am part ethnic minority. I'm not fully ethnic Vietnamese. I'm one half ethnic Vietnamese on my mom's side, but my dad's side are ethnic minorities. Children of the Mist, a documentary from last year. I don't have Hmong heritage. I don't, but it was set in a place where I had visited and was very close to my dad's ancestral, my dad's side of the family ancestral home. Of far northern Vietnam, up in the highlands. And in that documentary, we learned about the issue of bride napping or bride kidnapping, which is illegal, according to the Vietnamese government, but they have no means to enforce it. And it's also a cultural thing. So if they decided to crack down on it, there's going to be a lot of resistance. I thought it was beautifully made. I thought it, yes, it is an absolute heartbreak of an end, but it is this sort of documentary that I just so fully admire, from the craftsmanship to how personal it was.
Children of the Mist.
That was it.
And how would people watch, you know, Song Lang or Children of the Mist, you know? And then we'll get to the next films that you're going to tell me about, but so far, I'm wondering, how do people get to watch that? I miss Children of the Mist, but I've heard so many good things about it.
That's a great question. I know that it was an episode of PBS's Independent Lens, I think maybe a year back or so. So it was on public TV. And I think these days, I think that's probably locked behind what they call PBS Passport, because everybody has a streaming service now. So that's what I know about Children of the Mist. Regarding Song Lai, that's a great question.
There needs to be a distribution like online where we can just Netflix, Vietnamese Netflix, where we can just all go to, so we can see all these beautiful
films. Yeah, that'd be great. I do need to mention I'm also a firm believer of physical media as well, because.
Of what?
Physical media. I know that, okay, everybody's thrown out their VHSs or maybe their DVD players by this point. Yeah. But the thing is, with streaming services, we've seen a lot of cost cutting over the years with the streaming services. And there is no real intent to present films in context on a streaming service. You don't get that. That's one big thing I have against it. It's a great resource, I think. It democratizes things, but it's bad at placing films in context. And it's bad at keeping films there as well. I am, and I will get to this in the time we have remaining. My primary specialty when it comes to cinephilia, I'm actually old Hollywood, pre-80s Hollywood. Every single, from Betamax to VHX, VHS to DVD to Blu-ray to streaming, fewer and fewer films are making the jump every single time we transition to a new form of media. And it's bad for film preservation. It's bad for a collective memory of a general collective cultural memory of us as a society. So I think, honestly, I don't know how Song Lang or something like that would get a physical media release, but I'm skeptical about streaming services to an extent. So I'll leave it there with my rant.
Got it.
I haven't given you a third movie yet.
Third movie, fourth movie, fifth movie. I'd like
to draw. I think
if you got it.
This is further back, but this is something that Issa, one of Issa's Loney movies, gave me. This is back in the late 2000s. It's an Australian movie by Kwan Do. Footy Legends. I'm not exactly sure if it's Australian rules football or rugby because I am not familiar with either sport, but as a sports,
I remember that
as film. A sports comedy, it had me laughing. And sometimes comedies, with Vietnamese comedies, I just cannot stand some of them.
You know, Qua Do is one of two brothers. There's Ang Do and there's Qua Do out of Australia. Ang Do is like a stand-up comedian and an artist that is like one of the most famous Vietnamese men in Australia. And Qua Do is his brother who's like was like person of the year or something for Australia. So these brothers are like, you know, like amazing guys. And you know, I always look for them every year and hope that they will submit something to the film festival because they're both talented, you know, talented guys, talented artists.
And I think that movie is absolutely hilarious.
That's an interesting pick.
And I'll give you one more. Not because I necessarily am the biggest fan of it, but because I am a sucker for musicals in the first place. I just wish it committed to the musical form. It was Saigon in the Rain, or Saigon Chao Kan Mua, from Viet Film Fest 2021. I like to say that the first half is a musical, and then the music completely stops in the second half.
Oh, wow.
I wish it had committed to the musical form. And I think there needs to be some Vietnamese mainstream movies that commit fully to that. Because I think there's some really decent Vietnamese pop music and other genres that could easily justify a traditional musical.
That is so bizarre.
I don't know, lack of nerve, whatever, but I really enjoyed it, that one. So
yeah,
those are my four.
One of my favorite all time films is Owl and the Sparrow by Stefan Gauger. Yeah, that movie has so much heart. I mean, it's up there with Song Lang for me and Three Seasons, you know. Those probably are my top three films. Stefan passed in 2018, but he was a big I was always at the film festival. I mean, he was one of the reasons we all had such a wonderful time at the festival with Issa.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of stories about Stefan. Very, very fond stories, obviously, as well. That's the generation of directors I like to say that kind of built the foundations of the festival.
They sure did. Tony Bui, Tim Bui, Stefan Gauger, Ham Tran. Those guys were the first generation. Speaking of the first generation, what kinds of films are we expecting this year? Can you tell us a little bit about
that? Yeah, so we have a number of, again, we used to be the Vietnamese International Film Festival, and I like to think we have an international flavor, and we still do. I think we have an interesting mix this year from all over the world, the United States and Vietnam, obviously. But there are some also notable inclusions from Australia and Canada, France and Germany, and then we've got one film from Britain. I do want to talk about the German contingent because they have seven films this year. That's more than anybody outside of the United States and Vietnam, and usually it's France that has that third place position. So where the hell did that come from? Well,
Germany.
I know. Let me explain. One of our curators this year was a man named Nuk No Nok. He is the co-lead, along with his wife, Sarah Noah, of what we call the Dries Ung Film Project, or Turn It Around Film Project. And he had some of his participants of the Dries Ung Film Project submit to this year's film festival. Now, I need to note that I asked Nuk to recuse himself when we were going over the Dries Ung films. So he had no say in whether they got accepted or rejected. And I will say some of them did get rejected. So not all of them made it. Dries Ung is responsible for four of those seven German films. There are a few other short films, and they have one feature in the punny title, How Are You? Now, I know that's a pun, but it's a serious documentary about how the director is going to basically ask his family who are strewn across the world, Germany, Hong Kong, Vietnam, and Southern California, about why there has been such a disruption among his elders in how they get along, or I should say not get along. And yeah, we have this explosion from Germany this year, largely thanks to Dries Uhm, but I think it has been building gradually for a while. I think...
But you know, Eric, yes? you know, it's a really weird thing too. This year, I have so many podcast guests from Germany as well, and I didn't have that in the previous years. It's the strangest thing this year. German Vietnamese have really come to the forefront of entertainment. It just all of a sudden, you know, 2024 was one of those years for German Vietnamese content.
I think it's them finally piecing together their community,
yeah,
as a more unified whole. I think it's always been there, but I think there are other countries where you can say this of as well. The Czech Republic, I think, because of the program of migrant workers, economic workers for the Eastern Bloc, I think they've got a community as well, but it just needs to cohere. I think there are other countries. I think the UK can do a better job as well.
But the UK doesn't have very many.
No, but
like the Germans or the Czechs, there's quite a few more of them, and I think that their kids are actually coming of age these days. You know, they're finally in their mid 20s, late 20s, and they're finally doing things now. And I think we're going to see a lot more of them come out in the next few years to come. And then there's this like other smaller wave of people that went to Japan, Taiwan, Korea, that we won't see for another 15, 20 years, which is very interesting to me, these migration patterns, immigration patterns that produce art that we won't be seeing for the next 10, 20 years because, you know, that first generation is busy making money. And then that second generation, once they get sort of like this foothold in wherever they're living, they start to make art.
Oh, yeah. I look forward to those waves. I hope to be around to see them. I hope I will be there. But yeah, there's that. I think we have some significant, one more thing internationally, significant contributions from Canada as well. Canada has always been strong. It helps that there are northern neighbors, but our opening night film is Rue. It's directed by Charles Olivier Michaud. Okay, he's not Vietnamese, but the plot is about a Vietnamese family who come to Quebec as boat people, and they try to make a life for themselves. And they largely go about their lives quietly with their trauma over their experiences a little under the surface. Not speaking about it, but there are reminders in their everyday life that follow them. It is a drama. I wouldn't call it a family movie. I think if you have emotionally mature children who can handle maybe some of the more disturbing images of the boat people, I'd invite them to come see it. It will play the Frida Cinema in Santa Ana on Friday, October the 11th at 7 p.m. That is our red carpet opener. It is not going to be available online. It has been nominated for Best Feature and has been nominated twice for Best Actress. Chloe Jeanji, who plays the daughter, and Chantal Thuy, who plays the mother of the family.
And Chantal Thuy actually won the equivalent, I think, of an Oscar in the Canadian awards section,
she
right?
Did.
That's a big thing. I mean, for the country of Canada, you think about that. Best actress in a feature film, the equivalent of an Academy Award here in America. That's a huge prize.
And I know most people don't think too much about Canadian film, but they have a very healthy history up there. Very healthy history. Both French language and English language. So it's extraordinary, really.
Yeah, I look forward to it. I actually interviewed the actual writer of the book, Rue, but she's such a powerhouse too. What an interesting lady. She was running a restaurant for so many years. I think it was 14 years. And the people that came to the restaurant were like all kinds of artists. And this one publishing woman kept coming back and saying, you know, you have a story in you, and had her, you know, really write this book. And you know, and then submitted to her, the publisher, and, you know, became a book, and that book was adapted. And I remember when Chantal was telling me about this book years ago, she said, you know, working on, you know, helping get this book produced and acting in it. And here we are today, many years later, Chantal winning this, this acting award in Canada. What a big deal that is for us.
Oh, yes. Very much.
And it's a big deal for us to be able to see it on October 11th.
Yeah, it's a deliberately paced movie, but I think it is truly rewarding in the end. I think it's one of the most, I'm going to drop objectivity here. It is very deserving of its nominations. And it is very well deserving of its place in our schedule as our red carpet opener. So
I understand that there are a lot of Vietnamese kids in high schools in Orange County. And I understand that several sponsors, a group of people, had gotten together to pay for buses for La Quinta, for Bosa Grande, for all these high school children to get to the festival during Friday, or is it Saturday?
Friday.
Yeah, during the day. And I find that to be so heartwarming when I hear about these, you know, these community members that get together. You know, dear friend of mine, Dr. Bao Nguyen, and Dr. Trang Nguyen, she's a principal out of Bellflower, at one of the Bellflower Elementary Schools. Jackie Nguyen, I think Amy Nguyen, all donated for you know, buses, and I think they really got probably hundreds of kids being, you know, bused into the theaters to be a part of this film festival. It's a big thing for me.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, what we're referring to here is something called the High School Students Day. It's a tradition that began at Viet Film Fest in 2007. And essentially what goes on is that the kids who are taking Vietnamese language courses in the Little Saigon area at the high school level, we bus them in for our morning and midday screenings on the opening Friday of the in-person screenings. And this set is also available online. It's not just for secondary school students. So, you know, us adults can see it too. It's perfectly fine. But this is for them. This is for them to see a side of Vietnamese culture that they cannot get only from Orange County. I look at the lineup for Crossing Generations, which is the name this year for the high school student set, and Mike is set in the Dakotas. Viv Silly Mango is set in a middle school in Australia. Pho is French. One Summer Night was shot in SoCal, but it's meant to have been to take place in Louisiana. And Boat People, one of my favorite short films of the festival, is an animated short film that comes to us by way of Canada. This is to open their eyes. I think in the past, I think the tendency was to get films with the Vietnamese language in there so that it appeases, you know, again, Vietnamese language teachers. But I think in some ways that is a little limiting. And I think for some students who may not be interested in certain sorts of films, that may be a disservice. So we try to strike a balance between, yeah, there's some Vietnamese in there, but also have narratives and themes that appeal to, 13 to 17 year olds. This set is also being given to other schools that are not in Southern California as well, that we know of. We hope that they also enjoy, and they're not necessarily Vietnamese serving those schools. It's a tradition we're very proud to uphold.
Yeah, I'm so happy. And I know, you know, a lot of this coordination came from La Quinta High School's two teachers, Kim O'Dowd and Chris Tran Burton, two ladies, two teachers at La Quinta High School that really, I know, reached out to Dr. Bao. Dr. Bao reached out to this South Bay community. And I think Viet Dinh is another person that was part of this, and Dan Nguyen. I hope that I got all these people, their names right. But these are people that I know that really chipped in. And you know, I find this to be such a beautiful thing. It's not just filmmakers, but it's high school, and then it's the Vietnamese community that's in here in Southern California, all coming out to support one another, to really grow the awareness of what's happening in the entertainment industry, and showcasing that entertainment, the business of entertainment, is a possibility for young people. And I think more young people should look into careers that are related to the entertainment industry. There's a lot of money if it's done right and if you pursue it long enough. And I know that that's not something that's preached a lot in our families, but it needs to be.
Can I just add a little bit to that? Please. I, every year since 2022, the OC Register has contacted me to be a judge on what they call the OC Artist of the Year. The OC Artist of the Year looks at artists at the high school level in various categories, instrumental music, vocal music, dance, digital art, fine art, and then the category that I judge, which is film and TV, along with a few other folks as well. I've gone there the last few years, and it's dominated, and this is very local knowledge, by the likes of Orange County School of the Arts, Huntington Beach Arts Academy, St. Margaret's Episcopal, which is in South County, big private schools. But every now and then, there's one or two Vietnamese kids from a Fountain Valley High or Beckman. Beckman is on the Tustin Irvine border, for those who don't know, or something like that. And then I think there was one Latina girl from Santa Ana High School, of all places. It's demographically dominated by a certain, you know, sort of kid. And Vietnamese, and there are a number of Asians there. They're generally not Vietnamese, but every now and then there's a Vietnamese kid, and maybe they're not as refined as the OSHA kids or the Huntington Beach School of the Arts kids, but you can see the desire. And I think you also see, and I say this not to criticize, a lack of understanding of where they come from. I'm not saying that as criticism. They're young. They have time to learn more. But I think it's still reflective of the community that sometimes I don't think talks as forthrightly about the many issues of the Vietnamese American community that we have, of why we're here in the first place, and many other things. So it's something that I've noticed. And I think it will grow gradually.
Yeah, Eric, I really appreciate you bringing that up. And I think that the hard topics that are typically swept under the rug for us, I hope that there is a proliferation in podcasts, Vietnamese, you know, owned podcasts that come and talk about these things, mental health, you know, the inability to kind of like engage in the entertainment sector and the arts and the creative business, you know, and what you just spoke about. So I hope that, you know, as we grow as a community, we're able to kind of communicate more about these topics that we sweep under the rug. Lastly, where can we find all this information online? Yes.
So pretty much everything's on vietfilmfest.com, our website. But if you would prefer, to consume social media, we're also at vietfilmfest on Facebook and Instagram. We use a virtual platform called Eventive for our virtual screenings. So you'll need to there's a link to that on vietfilmfest.com when you go to the schedule and the ticketing. It's somewhat seamless, and it's just you'll need to read a few things if you're unfamiliar with it, but it's all there. We are also in person as well, as many of you know, from October 12th and October 13th. So that's Friday, Saturday, Sunday at the Frida Cinema in downtown Santa Ana. The Frida is the only independent theater in Orange County. They fashion themselves as the as the Orange County's year-long film festival, and they've been wonderful partners. We've been with some of the chain theaters in the past with these film festivals, but none of them are nearly as helpful on the projection side, on the nitty-gritty logistical side, as the Frida. Absolutely wonderful partners, and we're so glad to be back there.
Yeah, it's like a community nonprofit theater, which is a godsend for an event like this. Eric, thank you so much. I do hope that you and I can create an annual catch-up like this. I don't know why I never thought of it before. I just, I think you and I worked with each other last year on an event for the film festival launch, but that's sort of like the first time I was aware of who you were. And then, we were so busy last year before, but now it's like, I'm so glad that you and I had this time to talk about the film festival, because you know a lot about what's going on and, the curation of films. And I am so, I'm so delighted that we did this. And like I said, I hope that we can do this every year.
Oh yeah, that would be fantastic. It's been a pleasure being on here.
It kind of reminds me. Our conversation kind of reminds me. Do you know who Larry Mantle and Film Talk?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I try to use it if I can every week. Tried.
Yeah. Okay. So Larry Mantle, I've been following him for decades. I've been a fan of him ever since. I discovered him in my early years, but probably when he first started. And Larry Mantle is a, he's not just film or not just pop culture. He's sports. He's everything. He's an encyclopedia. And, having this conversation with you today made me feel like I was speaking to our Vietnamese Larry Mantle.
No, we're not going there. I'm not that jack of all trades. I don't know all sports. I'm a soccer man. I think we need to keep in mind that, again, I've been here for 4 years. I consider myself very new to this position. And like I said, there's a box of DVDs over there from previous years that I'm very slowly making my way through.
Well, every year we'll chip at it and we'll have a conversation with you about film, and we should just shoot the breeze every now and then and get you on just to talk about new releases that are coming from Vietnam, and maybe we should go watch a film or two that comes from Vietnam, like movies by Trinh Thanh or these directors that are making movies in Vietnam, and talk about it on the podcast.
Why not? That sounds delightful.
Thank you, Eric.
Kenneth.
All right. We'll see you in a few days.
Hi, this is Kenneth Nguyen. A few years ago, before I launched the Vietnamese podcast, my father and all of his siblings passed away. Their passing marked the loss of their stories and the connection to my grandparents and great-grandparents. This is partly what inspired me to start the work of the podcast. Many of you still have the opportunity to record and preserve the legacies of your own families. I've just begun to sit with a few families now for interview sessions to record the rich histories of their parents and the lives of the generations that preceded them. Don't let your family's stories go untold. Take a moment to reach out to me, and together we will bring out your family's story on a recorded journey. I've included the link in the episode description. Visit VietnamStoryBank.com today for more information.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.